Welcome back to God Books, the podcast where we talk to booksellers all around the world. And on today's episode, I am so very glad to be going to Ireland, probably my favorite place in the world. It was my home for a bit over 5 years, and more importantly, it's the home of some pretty amazing bookshops. Now, I had a few favorites during my time in Dublin, for sure, but today we'll be going to Ireland's west coast, to a little town called Westport, and a bookshop like no other, Tertulia. Tertulia describes itself as a magical place, which may or may not be a Harry Potter reference. Part of its magic is the story of its owners, Neil and Breed. In 1997, after Neil finished working on Saving Private Ryan, remember that? They drove up to Mayo in their camper van, and at some point, they took a wrong turn. So they ended up outside this dilapidated old schoolhouse overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. They had a cup of tea, and they thought, I wonder what it would be like to live here. What if we left behind the madness of London, escaped to the ocean, and just see what happens? You know how you have these thoughts sometimes during your holidays, but you never do anything about it? Well, that is not Neil and Breed, because they put an offer that day on the schoolhouse, and it was accepted. And they're still there to tell the story 23 years later. The bookshop, Tertulia, felt to them like a natural progression, and it opened its doors just a few years ago. Since then, despite a pandemic and being set in a small town with quite a few other bookshops around, Tertulia has become many people's favorite place. So I wanted to find out why, so I sat down for a virtual cup of tea with Breed and Neil to hear more about their magical bookshop on the west coast of Ireland. Hello and welcome to God Books. I'm very excited to have you with me today. I've been trying so hard to get an Irish bookshop on this podcast for years now, so I'm really very happy to have you. Let's start, as I usually start, with a virtual tour of your bookshop of Tertulia. Would you like to give me and our listeners a little tour?
Right. Well, we are in a town called Westport in the west coast of Ireland. We have the Atlantic Ocean on our doorstep, so we can see the ocean from our windows. We have the mountains. We have Crowpatrick, which is the holy mountain where St. Patrick climbed up, and there's a church on top of the mountain, and he spent 40 days, 40 nights on this mountain, and he drove the snakes out of Ireland.
To Spain.
Yeah. I'm not sure where they went, but they're not in Ireland.
They're all here. I can confirm. Yeah. They're all here.
So when you come into our shop, you have this backdrop behind you of the Atlantic Ocean, which is really lovely. And the first thing you see is some photographs from different movies that I worked on, like Saving Private Ryan, In Love and War, which is a Hemingway story set in Italy, filmed in Italy. And then you come into the main part of the shop and you're kind of guided in through a wooden floor, which was part of a James Bond set from The World Is Not Enough, or as I always tell people, The Pay Was Never Enough. And you come into our big table where we have all the latest books, but not just bestsellers, but like interesting books, because we don't just sell the top 10. We sell a lot of unusual books. So a lot of philosophy books, a lot of history books, a lot of, well, we obviously have some top 10 books, and we also have some cookery books, but and we have a couch and a couple of chairs, and we have a coffee table where people can sit and have a coffee. And then by the window, when you're looking over at the sea, we have some floats that we found in the sea, which we put on top of each other, which are kind of cool. They were from the 1950s from Russian fishing vessels, which were washed up on the beach. And I stuck two of them on top of each other, put a table on, and you can sit there and just look around and just enjoy the atmosphere in the shop. We have lights from Harry Potter. We have a cupboard under the stairs, which is from Harry Potter, with cushions from Harry's bedroom. And we also have the envelopes from the first movie on the wall and the Daily Prophet from the movie, which I was handing out to the workers when they were going to work in the Ministry of Magic. Now, I always tell the children who are so excited by Harry Potter, did you ever meet anybody who worked in the Ministry of Magic before? And I say, well, you have now. And then we have a science fiction corner, which is some pictures from Aliens and Event Horizon, which are two big cult classic sci-fi movies that I worked on. So we have a kind of real movie book kind of feel about the place, and people seem to like it. And a lot of people do say it's the best bookshop they've ever been in, so I'm being modest here.
But they say that to every bookshop that they like. Yeah.
Anyhow, so
there's lots of everybody's favourite bookshops in the world.
I'm sure there is. But we are a little bit different, and we're quite small, and we're kind of, what's the word, like sort of intimate. You know, you can't hide. There's nowhere to hide, apart from the cupboard under the stairs, of course, which sometimes children go into and we never see them for weeks on end. So, yeah, that's it, really. And a yellow carpet, and just the bookshelves are divided up with part of the sets from The World Is Not Enough. The lights, they were telegraph poles, which were on one of the sets, and they kind of divide up the bookshelves, which I think is quite nice. You know, when you have a wall of books, sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. So when you have it divided up, it kind of makes life a little bit easier for some people, maybe not for everybody. So there you go. That's the virtual tour of bookshop.
That's the magical place that you work in. That sounds amazing. And I love the connections with the movies that you worked on before and the little Harry Potter universe you've built there. That sounds really fun. I was going to ask you about this a bit later, but maybe since you brought it up in your virtual tour, let's talk a little bit about what you were doing before becoming booksellers for both of you. So you mentioned you worked on movie sets and you were involved with quite a few productions that we might have heard of. So you want to tell us a little bit about your before being a bookseller life? What did that look like?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I started off in 1985, which is probably a long time before you were even born.
It's only 2 years before I was born.
Okay. Okay. You're a young son.
Only two years. Now I feel really good.
So I started on Aliens in Pinewood Studios in London, and it was directed by James Cameron and starred Sigourney Weaver and Bill Paxman. I used to think, when I started on this film, pinch me, because I can't believe I'm working with a just big Hollywood production with these Hollywood actors, and I was getting to meet them all, and I was helping build the sets, and it was just magical, because, you know, I was watching them film and I was taking photographs. So I had photographs in the shop of some of the action on the scenes, and I just loved it. That was the best job I ever had until we started working in the bookshop. So and then I went over to Hollywood. I was dating an American girl before I met Breed, and I lived with her in Los Angeles and worked on a TV show called Moonlighting with Cybill Shepherd, and Bruce Willis was his first big break in Hollywood. And that was amazing because it was on locations all around Los Angeles. So I did that for a while, doing the lighting, and then came back, traveled, met Breed, and traveled around the world. Not working on movies, just, you know, what we did, just traveling. Worked in Australia for a while. And then I went back to the studios and worked on with Julia Roberts in a terrible movie called, that's how bad it was. Mary Riley, that's it, I forget it now. The movie was about the maid who was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde's maid in Edinburgh. The worst film I've ever seen in my life. And I was on it for like nearly a year. Anyhow,
didn't really get Julia Roberts any Oscars or anything that month.
No, God, it opened for a week in America and closed. It got the worst reviews. You've never heard of it, and you'd never want to watch it. And then I went worked on a few other different movies. Went to Italy, went to Ireland, working on films, and then we moved to Ireland in 2000. But that's 23 years ago. And I got a phone call to go back to Harry Potter. But they just started working on Harry Potter. So I went over, and I was only part-time, and I would do specific jobs, like some special effects. There's a scene in The Prisoner of Azkaban where Hermione goes back in time, and she goes to the pumpkin patch because they're going to kill Buckbeak, and she throws a stone through the window, hits Harry on the head to warn him. Yeah. And I actually brought the camera through the window, and I didn't hit him on the head because otherwise I'd have been fired. But that's just one of the little things I did. I did other bits and pieces, but it was always part-time. But I did all the films. So when that all finished in 2010, I decided that I've had enough of working in movies and that we'd think about maybe opening the bookshop. So that's it, really. And then over to you, Breed.
What a life. Okay, Breed.
Ian always makes his job sound very exciting. And mine in comparison never does, but I actually reckon mine was more interesting than his. But okay.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So that's because I was an accountant, okay? But
Oh, yes.
And people always get turned off by that straight away. However, I worked in advertising, like for advertising agencies. So like one of our biggest clients was like Guinness and Ford cars, you know, so it was a really, you know, one of the top agencies in London. I also worked in publishing, which had lots of magazines like FHM and Elle magazine and Q magazine. You know, it was a really cool, trendy place to work. And while I was there, I met Neil, yes, and we got married.
In Dublin.
And in Dublin. So yeah, that's kind of what I did. Then I set up my own business when we moved here. So I suppose to explain, we left London and we came to live here. So like you said, where we live isn't even a village. There's about 15 people live in
A
it.
little hamlet.
It's a little hamlet, I suppose. So yeah, so we bought an old schoolhouse, which was the village school, which would have had about 100 children in it when it first opened in 1937. It's been empty since 1970. We bought it and we did it up. So we gave up our kind of more busy jobs in London and decided we go live in the countryside. Our daughter was only one, and we would do the school up and we'd set up ourselves in business. So we've done lots of things, lots of jobs. We've done lots of community work as well. Living in a small village, it's really important to, well, one, to integrate ourselves into the place that we live, but there's lots of, you know, there's lots of need for voluntary work to progress the place that we live in. So we've done a lot of kind of voluntary things, community-based projects, and I suppose the bookshop was a kind of a natural progression from that, really. We both love books and kind of stumbled into it by accident, and we worked briefly with someone else on another bookshop project, and then we thought, oh no, you know, we really want to do this properly and do our own thing. So that's how we ended up with the bookshop.
Yeah, because I was working on Saving Private Ryan, which the opening scene was filmed in Wexford, you know, the one with Tom Hanks, directed by Steven Spielberg. And after they finished filming down in Wexford, I decided that I was going to have a holiday in Ireland, because I was in Ireland. We were living in London at the time. The breed came over and we decided to drive to Cork, where my family's from originally, and then drive up to Westport to see a friend. And on the way, we took a wrong turn and saw the old building that was derelict. So this building we're in now was derelict. And it took me the best part of 10 years to finish working on it. And it's still an ongoing project because it's a big old schoolhouse and it's by the beach. So we get wild, wild weather in the winter. Unlike you in that Andalusia, who have the sunshine.
With
We
the wild, wild heat, I guess, but yeah.
have the wind and the rain and but it's lovely. And we're happy here. So, yeah, so that was it really. But setting up business here, you know, it's a challenge because it's remote. But, you know, I'm sure you know you're remote as well. So it's one of those things you just, you know, your decision and you go with it. Well, we saw the building. The day we saw the building, we put an offer on it, bought it the same day, which
Was
is
that the house or the bookshop, or
the
were
house.
they in the house?
No, the bookshop is in the next town, which is half an hour away. So that's
Okay.
proper town, proper.
Oh, okay.
And we
With
rent.
a few more people can walk
Yes.
by.
A bit more,
Yeah.
and we rent the
Yeah, we rent that. We
premises.
don't own it,
Yeah.
unfortunately. No.
Well, I love the story. I love that every time I talk to a bookseller, when you ask them, how did you become a bookseller? It's always a different story, and it's always so interesting, and everybody gets to it following their very own unique path. So that's really cool. We'll have to do a separate episode with you, Neil, to ask you about all the movie stars you met and what Julia Roberts like and all that.
Well, I always say that they met me as well. They probably don't remember me, but
No.
Well, they'll listen to this episode and they will now.
Yeah.
So I have a bunch of questions to follow up your story of how you came to open the bookshop. And a lot of what you said makes me think of my life now. Like, we moved from a big city, from Berlin, to a small
Similar.
village here in Spain, and we have a little girl as well. I, however, cannot seem to be able to convince my husband to open a bookshop with me. He doesn't seem to be interested in that as much as I would be. But when we first moved here, I was looking at the possibility of opening a bookshop in the village where we live. It's not a very small village, but it's small. And in the winter, there's almost nobody here because it's a very touristy place. So I was hoping maybe you can tell me a little bit about that. How did you not how did you come up with the idea of opening the bookshop? Because that I feel can be quite a organic, natural thing to happen. But how did you keep it alive for all these years in a small place? Because I've been talking on this podcast to people with bookshops in large cities who are struggling to, you know, make ends meet for their bookshop month to month. So how do you keep it alive? Is it hard? Is it easy? How does it work?
No, it's not easy.
No. Well, in the town we live in, the town where the bookshop is, there's three other bookshops. So there's four altogether in a small town. Oh, wow.
Well, to clarify, I guess, yes. So there's about, I think the population is 7,200.
Yeah, something like that.
In the winter. However, yes, there's two other bookshops and one, you know, rare bookshop, like secondhand bookshop. They're in the town. So we're on the coast, as we said, which is called the Quay. So it's slightly offset from the town. You know, we're not in the center of town, and it's a very touristy area. You know, it's a communal space. There's an old house called Westport House, which people go to view, and there's grounds, and there's an adventure park there. So we're in a slightly different part of the town. However, saying that, it's still quiet in the winter. And we do struggle in the winter. For a lot of businesses in rural Ireland that are, you know, that rely on tourism, yep, basically you're busy for 6 months and you're quiet for 6 months.
That's, mm-hmm, apart from Christmas.
That's how it is. Yeah, well, that 6 months includes Christmas. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it works. So we opened in 2019, so we've not been open that long.
4 years, exactly 4 years this month.
So 4 years this month. How we keep it going, well, it's constantly working at it is the truth of it. So our idea to set it up there is because we believed it could be a destination bookshop. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bookshop on a street that people pass by because we don't have that quantity of people. So it's a place people come to visit.
So they know about it first and they come there,
yes,
for you,
and they
you,
come,
right,
to visit, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's the mainstay of our business. So we get a lot of visitors to Westport also who have family connections to the area, so not necessarily the town but the whole region. So Mayo, the region we're in, is quite a large area, but it's got about 120,000 people. So we get people from all over Mayo come to the bookshop, you know. So they might come on a Sunday afternoon and they come on a visit to Tertullia and they go for a coffee and they go for a walk or they go visit the beach, you know, they do that. So we're part of what people come to do. So that includes, you know, people who live in the area, people who visit just for holidays, or people who come back to visit their family. So we're just building that brand all the time. So in a sense, we're bringing people to us. That's the idea. So not the other way around.
But the problem was, of course, COVID came along just as we opened. And that really set us back quite a long way because we hadn't really built up, you know, the name Tertullia was like, you know, it's all new. And then there was no customers, of course, because there was nobody around. So it kind of set us back. I think we would be more established now if it wasn't for COVID, but, you know, it upset everybody and everything.
Yeah.
But it did give us an opportunity to do other stuff during that time. So, you know, we did do stuff on YouTube. We had
Tertullia TV,
which, you know, we interviewed about 50 authors. You know, so we got a chance to do other things and we got our website really nice. And, yeah, so there was upsides and downsides, wasn't there, as there was for other people. So, yeah. Yes, it's a challenge. In a small town, there's no doubt about it. We sometimes look out the window and there's nobody around and we dream.
And it's raining.
And it's lashing rain and we dream of like cities where there are people.
We dream of Andalusia. Yeah.
Well, when it rains, it's the same here. So,
and especially our, you know, we have bookshop friends over there. We definitely dream of Andalusia. However, so yes, it does take a bit of work, but it's wonderful at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine particularly challenging to open and then have a pandemic fall on top of you. I'm going to ask you, did you imagine it working in this way from the beginning? Did you set out to be the type of bookshop that people come to from the region, from far away? Or did you just notice that this is what is happening after you had opened it? I mean, was that intentional on your side?
That was intentional, yeah.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have done it otherwise because we didn't have that purpose in our mind and our modus operandus that we wanted to have. You'd be crazy, really, because it is a small town. So how are you going to make it work? You know, so no.
But you can't be like every other bookshop. So we tried to be different, which is obviously with the Harry Potter and the James Bond connections and the couch and the coffee. You know, the other bookshops don't have couches, coffee, James Bond or Harry Potter. So we are different. People who discovered us over the last 4 years come back all the time. Even if they only come on holiday once a year, they come back to us, which is really lovely. So we have a regular clientele. And people like our shop, which is really lovely. It makes us feel good.
So tell me more about how you build the strategy, this very intentional strategy of having people come to you. On the one hand, there's all these elements that set it apart, which you've mentioned, perhaps there are others as well. And then did you focus your kind of marketing promotion strategy around letting the world know that you are there and what is special about you and how they can reach you? Or how did you go about it, step by step? Because just from thinking of other conversations with booksellers, I think that's something that some bookshops might struggle with, like how to really promote themselves. And maybe if some other booksellers are listening, they can learn something.
It's an irony. I know you asked, did we set out to do it? And yes, I'm saying most definitely we did, but it's still an organic process because that was how we're going to operate. And that's one of the reasons we believe we could be successful. We also set up a very clear mission and a very clear purpose. So our purpose is to make a positive contribution to the way that the world thinks. So I think it's very important to have a purpose. You know, our purpose wasn't to sell books. You know, yes, that's what we do in order to make a positive contribution. So it was looking behind the reason behind why we wanted to have this business. And that's very important to set that up and to be clear about why you're open. And it sets the whole tone for the business.
Yeah.
So there is that. But at the same time, promoting ourselves is very organic. I mean, if we were to say what we did in the first 7 months before COVID, before we even imagined something like COVID would happen, how do we promote ourselves? I suppose through social media, through word of mouth, you know, again, making sure that everyone who comes through the door has a really positive experience and then they tell other people, you know, and in Ireland particularly, that's so important. Everybody talks about, everybody knows everybody, actually. Yeah.
they're all related.
Yeah, like, I don't know, it's a small country, you know, we talk a lot and we are very connected to each other and we feel that small island. So that's very important. So and like we said, there's a big diaspora. You know, Ireland is a nation, isn't it, of diaspora. So in lots of ways. So like I mentioned, people in Westport, but they could be living in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And then they tell their friends in Dublin, and when they come to visit, they come in to visit us. You know, so it was making a really special effort. Or well, it wasn't an effort; it was just natural to really engage with our customers and understand where they were coming from and what they liked about the bookshop. We really worked on that in the beginning.
And also, we have a lot of American tourists. Now, they don't always buy books, but quite often they do. Because, I mean, there's something like 5 million Americans claim descent from County Mayo. And, just 5 million. You know, it's just incredible. That's just mad. You know, there's 36 million Americans claim descent from Ireland and 5 million from Mayo. So we get a lot of American tourists because they come back to find their roots, you know.
Yeah.
So, there is that as well. That's part of it. But we also looked for collaborations, you know, so who can we collaborate with, you know, because we're a small bookshop, like we said. So how can we make ourselves bigger? You know, that's always been our intention. How can we punch above our weight, I guess, is another way, you know, we would say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a Rolling Sun Book Festival on in Westport. So we'd only been open a couple of months, but we did some events as part of that. We actually did some free events as part of that. There's an arts festival and we did an event with them. Like we did our first Harry Potter event and we had like 250 people came, like, and they were queuing outside.
We couldn't get them all in
to come to this event.
We're too small.
So then at Christmas, we collaborated with a bit called the Key Business Group down at the Key. And because we were a new business on the block, you might say, you know, we kind of worked with some people and we did like a Santa Fest, you know, on Christmas. So we were just always looking for opportunities. We started doing philosophy evenings. We
had authors in.
Put lots of different events on. We did kids events. We did stuff with the schools nearby. So the kids came in from the schools.
This was all before COVID.
It was all before COVID. This was in the first 7 months that we were open. I applied for grants. So we got a grant to work on literary tourism. It's an EU grant. So there's lots of things you can do. So it's just pushing yourself out there all the time. And obviously social media. Neil's got really good on social media. Because he's short as short attention span, it suits him perfectly. And he just loves not listening to me nagging him so he can be on his phone for 2 hours a day doing social media. And then, you know, that's his excuse for everything. So that works really well as well. Yeah.
It's good to play to your strengths, you know.
You have to play to your strengths, exactly. And then, you know, getting people's email addresses, building up your email list, you know. So it sounds like not a lot, but actually...
it's 24/7.
It's a lot. It sounds like a lot.
It just says... No talk at dinner time over books, because we would come back from work and we'd be going, you know, we should do this, we should do that. And my daughter would be saying, shut up.
Let's just eat.
But I think in the beginning of any business, you know, when you're clear about what you want to do and you know
you're enthusiastic.
You're really enthusiastic and you know you have to push yourself out there to make money, you know, and especially like it's a small town, like I say. So, you know, it gives you a lot of motivation. And we've done like I said, different voluntary projects before and different community projects. And we know the kind of energy it takes. So we were lucky we had that in the beginning. Like we said, COVID came and it kind of shut that down, unfortunately. But now we're getting back in our stride again.
Yeah.
I mean, I can definitely feel the enthusiasm. And I think it's like that with any new project you start, whether it's a business or any other project, really. The energy you put into it is what really makes it work or not work. Like I remember starting a project in Ireland, actually, a small social enterprise. And I would do it on the side of my job. And I would see that if I took a week off from working on it because it just didn't have the time or energy, nothing happened. It was just dead, you know? No. Because it fully depends on your energy, what you bring to it.
It does, yeah. You have to be facing in the right direction, don't you? That's the thing, you know, be clear about what you want to do and how you see your business and what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
And how you're going to develop it, who your customers are and what kind of books you want to sell and what kind of atmosphere you want to create. Yeah, you know, so we did work hard at all those things. But for most booksellers, it comes naturally, you know. Yeah. You have a natural flair for it. I think if you're going to be successful, you have to have that flair.
Well, I've been in bookshops all my life for different places around the world. And like, I always know when you walk into a bookshop and somebody's busy on a computer and doesn't say hello, and you walk around and then you walk out and they don't even say goodbye. You know, you think that customer service doesn't come naturally to everybody. Like when people come into our shop, and 9 times out of 10, we'd engage with them, you know, in fact, sometimes 10 times out of 10, you know, we say, hello, how are you doing? What are you up to? That's a good book, whatever, you know, what you're looking at here, you know, this is, we engage with people and you know, people seem to like that engagement. The Irish people are fairly friendly, and tourists love it when, you know, you start telling them about the local history in the area, because I mean, Mayo is full of history. So we tend to be, I wouldn't say we're over friendly, but you know, we're fairly friendly.
How many books are in your shop?
It's a small bookshop, but we have a lot of other, we sell secondhand books too. So we have a lot of other kinds of books all hidden out back. I don't know. I'd say about 6,000. Not huge. Some bookshops have 60,000, have 40,000.
We were in a bookshop in Berlin and they've had over 1 million books.
Which one? This one.
This one.
This one is ridiculous.
I'd say they have millions.
Millions. Millions. Oh my God. Incredible. Beautiful shop.
What was the last book you sold in your shop?
You sold it today.
I know. I can't remember what was the last book I sold. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Well, yes, I sold 3 books to... No, actually, the last book I sold, yes, of the day, was the book Mia mentioned. My Fourth Time We Drowned. That was the last one. And
a signed copy.
Signed copy. And before that, well, they were... It's a father and son, and they bought some books between them. The other one was Chris Patton, The Hong Kong Diaries, and another book called The End Game.
What would you do if you couldn't sell books anymore?
Lie on a beach reading.
Yeah, we just read all our books, so we just close the bookshop and we'd read 6,000 books.
On a beach.
Yeah, on a beach.
In Andalusia.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. And then what would we do for a living? Well,
win the lottery.
I don't know. No, we're not winning. I don't know what we do, but we would be reading books. Other than that, for me personally, I'd probably be doing some community or charity work or something. That's kind of where we've always would have ended up.
I could probably go back and work on a few movies, but you know, I've done that, been there, seen it, not too bothered.
What books are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading one which is actually the computer is balanced on it at the moment. It's called Politics: A Survivor's Guide. So I have that as my kind of fictional book. I've got our book club book is called Marzan. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that won the Dublin Literary Award. So I'm just about to start that. And I'm also reading Sparrow, which is a book by James Hine, which is a gorgeous book about, I suppose, this fictional ancient Roman time. So it's brilliant. Yeah, I'm reading it as well.
I've got about three books on the go as well. I'm reading All the Time We Drowned by Sally Hayden, the year about the migrants. I'm also reading a book about a block of flats in London where my mother used to live. And it's called The Scandal at Dolphin Square. A bit of a niche book, but it's a famous place where lots of MPs and famous people live, and there's always a scandal in this place. So somebody's written a book about it, which surprised me. So I'm reading about that. It's from London, where I used to live. And I'm also reading William Dalrymple. It's a book called Nine Lives about India. I love books on India. I'm a big fan of the subcontinent. I've got dozens of books on India, the history of India, and the people that live there. I love it. It's a bad place.
And I just finished, it's called A Black Girl from Pyongyang. It's a memoir about an African lady who ended up living in North Korea. Just finished that one.
Oh, and South from Granada. I've just finished reading that. So I love books on Spain as well.
So you read about 3-4 books at the same time? That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Some days I feel like one book and I don't feel like the other one, so I put it down and then I go, oh, I'll read that today. It's the joy of a bookshop. It's like being in a sweet shop. It's the sweet shop of literature. It's like, oh, I pick this up and I go, oh, I'll read that one. Which one will I read next? Oh, it's great. It's a huge perk of the job. Yes.
And my final question, what's your second favorite bookshop?
Oh, yeah. So we have to, well, we've got two second favorites, haven't we? So there's Librería Luces in Malaga, where we did our exchange with.
Which we love.
And also Libreria Rinascita, I don't know if I'm saying that properly, from Ascoli Piacenza.
You can show the book.
Oh, that's the book from which I don't want to be able to see. Piccino. So Ellen.
And Todo Modo.
And we've also got Todo Modo in, oh, there's so many.
Yeah.
So I went to Frankfurt, you know, to the Frankfurt Book Fair, and sponsored by the Rise Bookselling also. And there was 20 booksellers in our group, and all of those 20 are my other favorite books because they're just amazing. We had such a great time, and yeah, they're all my favorites.
So our holidays now are planned around going to bookshops.
That's perfect holiday. Yeah. Bookshop hopping.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant.
I want to come back for a second to your mission or your mission and vision for the Tulia, which I absolutely love, because you said it's a small bookshop, but the mission sounds like a very big mission to contribute to a positive change in the way the world thinks. Can you say a little bit more about that? And I know, Neil, that you did a master's in philosophy.
Reed.
Excuse me.
Sorry, it was you, Reed. Sorry about that.
Just the idea of Neil doing a master's or sitting in Trinity. Like I said, the attention span for social media.
It's never going to happen.
Sorry, I read it on your website and I thought it was about Neil, but totally, I stand corrected.
Oh, okay.
Tell me if it's in any way related to your mission, like, because it sounds like a master's that couldn't be going in that direction. I mean, you started peace studies, right? That's what you looked at.
Yeah, no, it does come from that mission, or you know, from that course. Yeah, so you know, the master's was on peace studies, so you know, it's the master's itself is a master's of philosophy, so in a sense it's encouraging a way of thinking, you know, really. Mm-hmm. It's a particular topic in this case was peace studies, and it was understanding the conditions of war and peace in the world, and you know, how we've evolved and how we might evolve, and the master's enables you to think differently, or that's the aim of the master's anyway. So when we opened the shop, not long after I finished it, it's an obvious thing to think, well, what do bookshops do? What do we want to do with the bookshop, and what do we think is the most important thing that books do? So books change the way we think. They make us empathic, but also when they're doing that, it makes us think differently. And most readers of books and people who engage with books do enable the world to think more positive. And in fact, the glorious thing about having a bookshop is that people who do read books are so positive, generally. You know, obviously, we have our ups and downs, everybody does. But it's people who read, the brain is different. The brain works in a different way. So that was the idea. And to find a mission bigger than just the book itself. It's what the books actually do to the world that's important. Why do we need to sell books? Because we want to continue, you know, to affect the world positively.
And maybe it's because if you get into the habit of reading and you do it throughout your life, even when you have those lower moments or harder times, you kind of always know that at the very least, there's a book that you could read that could make things better, or you could find the right book for the right emotion, for the right state of mind that you're in. And then the act of reading itself is a very peaceful act, right? I remember reading somewhere that if you're just sitting down and reading with a book, that's as peaceful as you can get. I mean, things might be happening in your mind, but if you look at someone reading, they look so at peace, right? So someone like that who does that regularly, it's probably not going to start a war. It's probably not going to get into as many conflicts as someone who does this.
Absolutely. I can't imagine.
I don't think Putin reads books. Yeah.
I was
Trump.
Just thinking that. I don't think they read too much.
No,
but also with the shop, the mission also encompasses being proactive in that space. So the bookshop itself, like most other bookshops or independent bookshops anyway, certainly, they're community space. So what Neil described to you about the layout of the shop, someone is taking kind of around, you know, you kind of go, yeah, you kind of come diagonally into the shop, don't you? And you go right to Harry Potter, but then you kind of go around the shop and then end up back at the counter. But when we're having events or when we're doing anything, the table, which is in the middle, moves to the back. So then suddenly it's an open space. It works really well. So the idea in the design was also to create that kind of open community space where we can encourage people to engage with each other. It's not just the act of reading. We want to create a space, what would be called a shared social space, we'll say, for argument's sake, that people could come in and discuss and have tertulias, you know, and actually learn to think together and discuss things properly and think together.
So we've had events where people who maybe don't have a book, but they have they're a philosopher or they're an economist
or a politician.
They come in and they talk. So it is a tertulia, really. You know, it's not just about the books, but I mean, the books are important too, of course. So like last Saturday night, we had an author who has written a book.
The Fourth Time We've Drowned
is Sally Hayden. She's award-winning author who's written this amazing book about people migration from Libya to Italy, drowned on the way and whatever. And it's a stunning book. It's won every award in the world. And we were so lucky to have her. And we had a full house of, like, it was the most we've ever had in the shop for an event. In fact, people were standing up. We squeezed them into the door. It was an incredible event. And she was she's just gone to Sierra Leone today. She works for the Irish Times as a correspondent for Africa. So that was very important. And that's the sort of things we kind of like to do. You know, we want important stuff, not just chick flick. You know, that's important too, of course. But you know, you want a mixture of everything. We can't be.
We don't call it that officially, though, in the book.
No.
Just to make that clear. That's what other people call it, I suppose, but we don't call it that.
All books are good. All books are good. You know, there's a book for everybody.
Yeah, depends what you need and when. But I understand what you mean, I think, like trying to. Basically, you can use a bookshop in the way in which you see fit to achieve the mission that you wanted to achieve, right? And it can become this social space, this place where you can debate important ideas, you can bring people together around things that they might not always agree on, right? And I know this topic, for instance, that you mentioned, immigration and illegal immigration, this is a big topic in Spain as well. And people feel very differently about it, right? And even though on an individual level, they might feel empathy towards people who have to undergo that very, very tough journey, because when you imagine, what if I had to do it? You feel what they might feel. But as a phenomenon, as a societal phenomenon, people might not feel the same about it. So I think if you think, what are the spaces in which we could talk about these kind of things? I think bookshops are the best places to do that for me, because it takes away maybe some of the emotion in a sense, but it allows us to have that conversation in a kind of a safe environment, starting from a book, but then going into whatever direction we might feel like going into. So I always think that bookshops will never disappear because they can provide this. And what other spaces might be able to provide this? I can't think of any others.
It's true. There isn't really that many spaces that provide it. In truth, there isn't. Yeah, there's lots of discussions had over glasses of wine or a dinner party.
Libraries.
Maybe libraries, yeah.
Libraries do too, yeah. I mean, we had a connection through this Spotlit EU grant that we got, which we weren't really able to use in the way that we wanted because of COVID. But one of the connections was to the Reykjavik libraries.
So in Iceland.
In Iceland, yes. We had a connection with them on Zoom now, and we didn't actually get to visit them, whatever. But we were working and seeing what they do. So one of the initiatives they do is called the living room. So what they do is there is a structure. I don't know if it's every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. They will pop up a couch, well, a living room. It's more than a couch, actually. A living room space within the library somewhere. It's quite, you know, their libraries, there's seven of them in the center of Reykjavik, and they're quite large from what I can see. So, you know, so they pop these up, and you can book this space for any kind of discussion you want, you know. And I just love this idea of being able to do that. Now, we're such a small space, we can't really pop it up because there's nowhere to pop it. So they're kind of, in a way ahead of us, you know, really. But they have provided that social space for discussion, and it's a great initiative, yeah. So some libraries are doing it.
I think one of the threads I've seen talking to independent bookshops all around the world, we sometimes in these episodes get to the conversation of, you know, will the online world take over? Will Amazon take over? Will bookshops be gone? And there seems to be this threat of, no, maybe they won't be gone because they've been so resilient over time, because they are also community spaces, not just places where you buy books, and they can adapt to where they are and provide kind of what is needed for that community, depending on what's happening in the moment. And any online platform cannot exactly do that, at least not yet.
Online platform, yeah. I mean, you know, the Rise Bookselling is an initiative, you know, that I was part of. And they had the first ever booksellers conference in Prague this year, just gone. And one of the amazing things that strikes us about it is that, well, there was 25 countries there represented from Europe.
And the world.
Yeah, but mostly Europe, mm-hmm. For this particular one, because it's a European bookseller, is that everybody's so enthusiastic. So it's incredible. So none of us, we all struggle to make money. I mean, yeah, you know, we make a living or whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of, yeah, like we talked about, there's a lot of initiative needed to keep the business going, but everyone's so enthusiastic and so motivated and passionate. And you just think, no, you see, Amazon just is nothing. It's just a computer that takes your order and shoots you off a book. You know, there's no comparison. They're just two completely different things.
They don't have book clubs. They don't have young kids coming in discussing. We have two book clubs for children, for 7 and 8 year olds and 10 and 12s or something like that. To hear those kids talk about the book is, you know, and they dissect the book. They're like adults. And you just go, this is amazing. These kids are just the future. And it's so lovely. And Amazon don't do that.
I've never heard of a book club for 7, 8 year olds. That's amazing. I love that.
Oh, great, amazing. Yeah, amazing kids.
Mm. And I have to say that every time I hear kids talk these days, I think, I don't think I was that smart at that age. Like, these new generations coming.
Yeah, they're awful smart. They really do seem awfully smart.
Level. A lot smarter than me.
Yeah. Well, completely different level. Yeah, we have a 7-year-old boy on our street, and I have so many quotes from him of, like, really clever stuff he said over the last year. Before I let you go, what I really want to talk about as well, because we haven't gotten talking about books, I think it would be great to get some book recommendations from you, and also to hear about what tends to sell best in your shop. So you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation the types of books, the categories of books that you sell. Can you tell me a little bit about your all-time, over these 4 years, all-time bestsellers or some of your favorite books that you've sold in the shop?
That's a big one. I suppose, well, if I look to the categories to start with, I suppose. So again, when we set them up, we wanted to put particular focus on nature and environment books, obviously the space that we're all in at the moment. So we saw quite a lot of really interesting books from that section, you know, about the climate, wildlife, and what's happening, about wildlife, about sci-fi, isn't it, climate fiction, some of those type of books to get people to engage with it as well. And then humanities, you know, so that section covers philosophy, sociology, you know, psychology, again, all books to do with changing the way the world thinks. So they're my personal two favorites in terms of the ones that we sell that we liked the best. It's kind of hard to say because we sell so many different books over the whole time.
We sell a lot of Irish fiction.
Yeah, we
and,
do.
And
yeah.
Like we know some authors. Like I have a good friend who's an author, and I sell her books all the time because I love them, and I'm good friends with her. So that sells quite well. And so Irish fiction is a big, big seller for us.
What's your favorite Irish fiction? I mean, everybody's reading Sally Rooney. I don't know if that's one of your favorites or if you have better recommendations.
It's not my cup of tea, really. But there's a book called This Is Happiness by Niall Williams, which is just the most beautiful book about a small Irish village. But it's very detailed. But it's just the most beautiful
book. He's a great Irish author. He was nominated for the Booker one.
So I sell a lot of copies of that because when people ask me what's good, I automatically go to that book. And also American Dirt, which was the number one. It's an American author. She's been in the shop, Janine Cummins, and it's an amazing book about migration.
It's a book that was a bit contested, right? Because because of who she is. She's not Mexican.
Yes. But she's lovely. She's married to a guy from Mayo, so that's why she came into the shop. So hopefully we're going to get her to do a talk at some stage because she's very pro-refugee and wants to help people. She's a nice person. So those two.
We do. Like we had, as with some of the authors that we've had, where we sold a lot of their books. So we had someone called Nuala O'Connor. So she wrote a book called Nora, which is the story or the fictionalized, semi-fictionalized account of James Joyce's wife called Nora Barnacle.
Who's so from Norway.
Everyone around the world knows about James, but they don't really know about his wife. I mean, we do in Ireland, but maybe not in other countries. Mm-hmm. So she wrote this amazing book about what she thinks their life was like. You know, so they're real characters in this book. I mean,
and James Joyce didn't come out very
James
well in it.
James Joyce actually didn't really come out very well in it.
He was a bit of a cad.
Apart from being a genius at writing. But that's a really quirky Irish story, you know, unique to Ireland, but it has that international flavor because, you know, everyone knows James Joyce. So we love that story.
I can imagine just from attempting and failing to read James Joyce several times, but to read Ulysses, that it probably wasn't very easy to live with.
Not alone. I think 99% of people that try to read Ulysses give up.
Have you read Ulysses?
No.
No.
I did as a younger person. Read sections of it, yes. But never read the whole thing. I mean, my personal favorite is Dubliners, if anyone's listening and hasn't tried and wants to read James Joyce. Dubliners is just stunning. I love it.
It's also, you know, readable. It has sentences that
yeah, helps. And I'm from Dublin and all the places he writes about I know, you know. In fact his father, when they, you know, became less wealthy, they bought a house in the street, two streets from where I live. So there's like a little plaque, you know, that the Joyces lived here.
I love history. So there's every year there's a history festival in Dublin. Obviously COVID was slightly different, but I go to the history festival and you get to meet all the authors that write these history books. And one of them is Tom Holland. And he's written books about the Roman Empire and the Greeks, you know, ancient Greeks. And Persian Fire is one of his books. It's about the Persians who attacked Greece in, 2000 BC or something? I don't know. Whatever. And it's just an amazing book. And so I love history. So I sell history books to people. If they come in, they're looking for a history book, I'm like, you've got to buy this. It's just great. So we sell that all the time. It's one of our best sellers. And of course, we have a history book about Grania Well, which is Grace O'Malley. She's the pirate queen that lived in Mayo,
in the 1500s,
and that's probably our best-selling book because
it's actually our best-selling book
because it's close. You know, it's actually the history of Westport, and this lady in the 1500s went to visit London to meet up with Queen Elizabeth I. They talked in Latin, They had a beer because you wouldn't drink the water in those days. So it's a great story, and the book actually brings the story alive. It's not a boring history book, and she's kind of like a heroine to some people. So that's our bestseller, but actually it really is our bestseller. So history for me is my number one thing.
I mean, there's lots of other books that we sell.
You
know, there's great Irish writers like Anne Enright. Her last book was called Actress, which I just absolutely loved, and she's got a new book coming out. We've got Claire Keegan, who everybody knows about kind of worldwide, her two novels. She's got a short story collection coming out.
She came into the shop
in September. She did an event with us. That was another Only Standing event as well. She came to the bookshop. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really, I mean, like everywhere, there's some great Irish fiction coming through, so we do sell that. But I love classics, and, like, I was recommending some books today to someone who was going away and they wanted, like, 10 books. So it's a great opportunity to get all your favourites. But one of them is, I can't remember the name of it now. It's a Spanish classic from the 1800s. Emilia Pardo, is it Emilia? She's a Spanish writer from that time. And I've seen she's like a cross between Jane Austen and Charles Dickens. So I love to read stuff like that, you know, from other countries to experience their classics.
A bit of everything, really.
A bit of everything.
And we also sell vinyl as well. I love music. Yeah, so we've got a small section in, just as you come in the door, you know, just two little racks of vinyl. And so people love music, love books, so it works quite well. You know?
Yeah, definitely a good combination.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you for the recommendations. I mean, you're very lucky to be in a country that's just full of storytellers and amazing storytellers. So there's a lot to choose from. I'd like to ask you, before letting you go, two questions that are book related that I've asked some of the booksellers I've had on the podcast before as well. And I always get interesting and very, very different answers. So I'm curious to see what you think. My first question is around a book that may have had something like a butterfly effect in your lives. Is there something that you at some point read that maybe didn't have an immediate impact, but over time led to some shift or in how you think and how you are? Perhaps your entire life trajectory would have been different had you not read this book. And maybe there isn't, but maybe there's some book you can think of that.
We're looking at each other. What's that book? Oh my God. One thing about being in a bookshop, which is amazing, is that you get to read so many books. I mean, you know, we read a ton of books. And sometimes I lose sight of, you know, of some of the ones that I absolutely loved because we read so many. We both read the Foundation series, which is Asimov. Science fiction, and we both read them
many years ago,
and I'd say not necessarily that it changed my mind or changed our minds about the world, but we kind of do keep coming back to, you know, to them as books, and the whole concept and the way that he thought about the world and what it would look like in the future, Asimov always comes into my mind when I'm thinking about the world in the future and how somehow the world that he thought was going to happen, that maybe we're actually going towards that world unbeknownst to ourselves. So that kind of sticks with me. Science fiction kind of does that a lot. Other favourites, like Dracula is a big favourite of mine, but whether it actually changed my view of the world.
She's not a vampire.
I'm always fascinated by vampires, and just fascinated by, the way that he wrote the book.
Well, I'm Romanian, so I had to read Dracula as part of our Romanian
really
mandatory. Because you get so many questions, you know, is
Dracula really
from Transylvania? It's like, okay, let me read the book so that I.
I read when I was a teenager. So it was one book. Well, it wasn't necessarily Butterfly Effect, but then that book that was written about. Well, it was about someone taking drugs when they were. It was a teenage book, and it was really popular in the 70s. Well, before you were born. And that book really did influence my attitude to drugs, actually, you know.
In a good way or bad way?
Well, in a good way. I was thinking, oh my God, because it educated me, you know. Because in the late 70s, early 80s, Dublin changed from being a very small city, really. It still is today, but it was, you know, it became a more dangerous city, became a city that had drugs in it, you know, and there was crime associated with it. Before that, it was like a small village almost. So Dublin began to change. And this book that I read, it was about a young teenager who unbeknownst to themselves, got involved in drugs and the effect that it had on them. And it always stayed with me and definitely influenced my outlook. But now, I mean, compared to the drugs that exist nowadays, but back then, it certainly stopped me from ever thinking about any kind of, you know, involvement.
I read The Moon's a Balloon. It's a biography from David Niven, who was a British actor who went to Hollywood and conquered Hollywood. He became a star working on movies in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And I don't think it had much of an influence on my Hollywood career, but I'd like to think it maybe a little bit.
No, it didn't. Get off.
But such a brilliant book, and it's very funny.
It just makes you laugh. What do you
know? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at with my question. It doesn't have to be, you know, I think it's hard to say, well, I've read this book, and then it changed my life, and I went on to do something totally different. That can happen, but it's probably not as common. But happen, if it's... Yeah.
But yeah, books do stay with you. Books somehow
good books
stay with you.
Yeah,
not every book, Brit.
No. But some books do. That's the question. Hmm. What ones stay with you?
Asimov, the Foundation series. There's 7 books. So it's quite an epic to read. You know, all 7 books, but they are they're magnificent. I'm a huge science fiction fan as well as history.
And then I suppose then there's like Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice. It's just like I just read it as it was part of my final exams at school, you know. And I've just loved it from the day that I ever started reading. And I'm hopeless romantic, and it still gets me every time. Yeah, absolutely love it.
Did you like the movie adaptation of it?
Oh well, the only one I liked, and I don't know if you've seen it, is a BBC one where it was it was a series. It wasn't, there was only, I think there was about 3 of them made. It had Colin Firth in it. And yeah
that's a good
the
one.
Only one. Yeah. It's the only one to watch.
It's because of Colin Firth.
He's oh, yeah, it's amazing. In fact, I'm thinking about it today. That's really weird. I don't know why.
I'm not Colin Firth.
And my final question. Okay, this is a big one. This has created different reactions on this podcast. So take your time. Think about it. If you had the power as booksellers to get everyone in the world to read one book, so everyone who can read is reading this book, they'll do it. You'll tell them and they'll do it. What book could you choose? And why would you choose this book?
I think because we've just, what is two really? There's a book called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown, which is an amazing book about the American West and about the American Native Americans who were basically driven off of their lands by the American, you know, settlers that came into the West. And it's heartbreaking. And I wouldn't say everybody in the world, but certainly everybody in America should read it. Every child should read it and realize what America is about, because, you know, it was founded on a lie, really. Yeah. You know, this land is free, we can take it. And it wasn't free, and they took it. That would be maybe for Americans, maybe. Maybe, you know, maybe not just Americans, but other people too. And then the book that we've just highlighted just this weekend, All the Time We Drowned by Sally Hayden, about the migration. That book people should read it, because they realize that the people that are trying to get to Europe are human beings and not just numbers.
That is one, actually. That is
incredible. It's an incredible book. It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's no wonder it won every award, because it's her first book, and she's very modest and a lovely human being. And yeah, that story needs to be told big time.
It's an interesting one. Yeah, because what comes to mind is, you know, a book that has, you know, beauty and love and lessons and has, you know, humanity in it. Don't know what that book is, actually. One of the books recently which I read and I'd never read before was To Kill a Mockingbird, and it's a lot of people's favorite book, but actually it's a perfect book in the sense that it's perfectly crafted. There's not one thing wrong, you know, there's nothing, it's perfectly crafted, but there's a huge message in it too. But I don't know if it still meets all that criteria. But there is beauty and love and empathy and I mean, this you know, obviously there's discrimination and racism in it, but it has all those things in it. So, yeah, that will be on the list, definitely.
Well, these are great recommendations. So thank you so much. I'm going to build a list of, I'm going to call them books to change the world or to make the world a better place or something, and then add these. Thank you so much for your time today. I felt like I traveled back to Ireland for a bit, and it was just really lovely to talk to both of you. But when I come back to Ireland, I'll definitely try to make it to your bookshop and see it in person.
Please, please do.
Because that would be very nice. And I'll bring my daughter, and hopefully by then she'll be a Harry Potter fan. And she'll... She's too little.
She will when she leaves the shop. By the time she leaves the shop, she'll be...
Yeah, she'll know all about it.
Yeah, she'll know before, she will be after, yeah.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to both of you.
No, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for listening to That Books today. If this podcast brings you some joy, makes you feel closer to the world of books and bookshops, please share it with just one friend that you know will appreciate it. We'll be back soon with more bookseller conversations. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.